Satu Sahana Bhunatu Sahaviryam Karavavahai Tejasvinavadhitamastu Ma Vidvishavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Okay, page 55 Sutra 1327 Virodha karaman nitichen na neka prati pater darshanat. Virodha, contradiction, karmani, inactivities, iti, thus, chet, if, na, not, aneka, many, prati patehe, because of the acceptance, darshanat, because of seeing. If one argues that there is contradiction in regard to sacrifices, the answer is no, since it is seen that the devatas can expand their forms into many. Sutra Prakashita. The Purvi Mimamsa detractor stubbornly denies that demigods can have bodies, for this would make it impossible for them to be in more than one place at once, right? Because their idea is, I'm doing the puja, my neighbor's doing the same puja, right? We're both chanting the same mantras, we're both calling Indra, and so then how can he be at two places at once if he has a body? Right, so their whole point is they can only be manifestations of mantras. They actually can't be personal. But if that's the case, by performing all their pious activities and elevating them to the heavenly planets, are they just going to be a mantra? You know, somehow they expect to have a body and senses and enjoy themselves. So they're not actually thinking very far ahead here. So we can see is that just as the impersonalists have their stubborn conceptions, like that to enjoy, so the karmis also have the same. So because of that, their intelligence get clouded. That's why it says that what do you call it? The bahushaka means that many branched intelligence, and they're not actually intelligent. So they very technical, very all these different things, very skilled, but we see not actually intelligent when it comes to understanding the absolute. Now, that's not a criticism of there and everybody else is so smart. No, it's that if you're in the material world, that means you're not so smart, right? Because we're not seeing Krishna in relationship to things. We want to see them without Krishna. It's just like, let us say I, you know, come along and there's this huge mansion, right? Beautiful gardens, very nicely clean, very nice. And the door's open, right? And I walk by every, it's not, I walk, you know, walk in and all that. Now, one is I can either think this house belongs to somebody and therefore be very, very careful, or I can think, hey, nobody's here. It's up for grabs. I can do anything I want and try to enjoy everything. Go to the fridge, turn on the music, lounge around on the couch. You know, go into the bathroom, use all the perfumes, you know, just to have a good time, right? So then the problem comes is that one has to be less intelligent to do that. Because otherwise they say, hey, this house belongs to somebody. No, nobody's here. There's nothing. I don't see anybody. What do you mean? In a sense. So because of the desire for enjoyment, either in karma or jnana, that stubbornness to not see the Supreme is there. And so the whole point is that then if you can deal with mantras, you can deal with the subtle, and the demigods don't have bodies, the Supreme doesn't have a body, so only we're, you know, somebody. You know, everybody else is a nobody, right? So that's the, you know, how you say, taking nirapeksha to a new level, right? So that's their whole point. They want to be able to say, I'm the Supreme, I'm the controller and enjoyer. They don't want to acknowledge. That's why then it says here, stubbornly denies. Because otherwise, if the demigods can do all this and they're less, why would God not be able to do it, with greater panache? You know, that's the whole idea. Yes.
It seems like both karmis and jnanis, they try to adjust everybody else around them according to themselves, instead of adjust themselves according to, God and, whatever surrounds them.
Yes, yes. That's why it's considered pious that someone follows the scriptures and restricts themselves and follows etiquette and tries to do things in the mood of sacrifice. Because even though they're only doing the things in the mood of sacrifice for their own benefit, but at least there's the concept that they're trying to please others, deal with others properly and everything. So that's why then it says don't disturb the minds of the ignorant. It means they're already doing something elevating. So therefore then you keep them in that position and then inform them of the higher understanding. Because then when they switch, they're already doing all the things. If they're doing things for sacrifice, now they can sacrifice to Guru and Krishna and the Vaishnavas, right? So that it works very nicely. But if we just say, oh, this is all Maya, this is all nonsense, it's all material, then they'll give up all that culture. Like I mentioned before one time, I was dealing with these Indian boys, some good families. And it was time to serve prasad and eat prasad and all that. And it was a total zoo. And afterwards, then I asked him, it says, if you were at your house and there was a wedding, family wedding, and so naturally part of the family, you'd be serving prasad to the, at least to the main guests or to the, the other party, right? So you would be doing that. I said, would you serve like this? No. And then they would go through and I said, discuss in that, and exactly, they would do everything perfectly. So I said, why are you doing this then? He says, well, because, that life is Maya, and so now we're in transcendental lifestyle, and this is half the brahmacharis do, so this is what we do. So just on the point, it's all Maya, you throw it out even though you know it works. But it's still Maya. Does that make sense? So that's the difficulty. That's why in dealing it has to be, is you have to maintain the culture, add Krishna consciousness. Now, of course, if one comes from a background where there isn't any culture, hey, then it's all Maya and you throw it all out. But then you have to accept the Vedic culture and mentality and everything like that, then you'll have something. Because if you don't, it's all Maya, and then we just speculate on how to live our life. Then at some point, when as we get purified and refinement becomes a natural course, then the difficulty will come is that then we can't, we won't know the Vedic, so we'll go back to what was Maya, what we gave up. Does that make sense? So the Vedic at least is based on pious qualities that are useful in Krishna consciousness. While anything outside the Vedic, it's kind of hit or miss, where it might have some good qualities, but not necessarily. Does that make sense? People are worried about the environment, right? And so there's big personalities that push the environment and that, go to conferences, make speeches and all that, right? What do they drive? Right? Are they riding around on a horse? No. And then how are they doing all this? All this, this nice presentations, they use projectors, they use all modern technology. Where did that come from? Right? You just go out in your backyard, you decide whether you want the Mac or the Android, seeds and all that, and then you plant those, and then, you water it nicely, make sure it gets good sun, and then, after the appropriate amount of time, then you pick your computer and your phone and everything like that. So in other words, their lifestyle is totally not green. But at the same time, they know it's a good thing. You understand? So that they know it's a good, that's good. You keep that part. The other part is the problem. So that's the thing. In the modern, then the lifestyle itself and the values and that, it's not necessarily very much of it is valuable. Principles, yes, but the detail, no. But in the Vedic, the principles and the detail are all useful. But what they're missing is the actual principle, which is Krishna. Does that make sense? So in qualities and endeavor, you know, knowledge, that's good in the Vedic system. It's useful. But the mentality is mundane. That has to be changed. But in the other, it's not based on Shastra, so good qualities may or may not be there. And proper knowledge and proper endeavor may not be there. Does that make sense? So it's depending upon which culture, they'll have this, you know, they say, you know, have cultures, they value relationships and things like that, but then not necessarily, then they have a strong, how you say? We don't see them materially developing so much. You know, they're just good with status quo, the relationships, it's going nicely, then what's the problem? And others will say that, oh, it's not going very well. You know, well, others then, they can balance those. Some of them are just into the material development, not at the expense of relationships. So depending on, it's each one's different. Does that make sense? You know, so it's like how you say, you know, here it's, they'll value the relationships. They'll you know, some will work hard, some won't, and you know the basic concept of lifestyle has some value, like that. But then the whole of Asia will have that basic kind of concept. But then the difference will be slightly. You'll see, you know, is there any discrimination that anything other than a boat is edible, right, or not? You never heard the saying is that you eat anything in the water except the boat, anything in the air except the plane, and anything on the land except, I forget what they said. A bicycle. Yes. Yeah, so like that. There they'll eat anything, you know. Whether it moves, doesn't move. In other words, you know, it's all open season, right? It's all fair game. Like that. Does that make sense? So the whole idea is that but other aspects of the lifestyle are very good. The personal, the relationships, the community, it's one of the strongest. So that's the whole thing, is that it's not scientific, the non-Vedic lifestyles. That's the problem. They'll have something that's good and then something that's bad. And so it kind of goes on. Right, but the Vedic concept is no. Use all the good things, now improve the consciousness. Right, so therefore, the Purva Mimamsa, we're going to have a problem with his understanding, but we're not going to attack that he's following the Vedic lifestyle. That we're not going to do. Some may do it, but that's actually not very advisable, because then they'll have an idea that following the Veda is actually not very good. Does that make sense? You know, because devotees, oh, we follow, oh, that's karma mimamsa. You know, it's like, it's karma yoga. But because it has the word karma in it, then it's got to be bad. Right? You know, you mention anything that's knowledge. You know, hey, Prabhu, that's, you know, that should be done like this. Oh, that's gyan. You know, we're not in. You understand? So this comes from not understanding, it's the concepts that they have wrong. That we're talking about, the philosophical points. That's the problem with karma and gyan. We're not talking about the lifestyle, but we take the whole thing. You know, it's like baby, bathwater, bathtub, you know, and if you can, blow the room up, you know, that'll definitely solve the problem, right? As what Hitler did, right, you know? He had to sign, I think they lost something, so a treaty, he had to sign someplace in France. They were defeated there.
Versailles,
yeah. Then after that, later, then he came back and captured the place. So he went back there, the same thing, and then the place where they signed the paper, he blew that up. So, you know, so like that, you can be very thorough. But then the problem is what do you have left? Where's the culture? There isn't any. Yes.
I was thinking that it's not easy to discriminate what you just described, because in Sambandha and in Prayojana, both karmis and jnanis, they have their own ideas. But then Abhidaya is just exactly, you know, in Vedic concept, exactly what we do.
Yes.
But then the Prayojana is completely different.
Yes.
And Sambandha is somewhat different.
Means it's which aspects they are, the principles will all be the same. Anyone in the Vedic culture, they all have a guru, they're all following a sampradaya, they're all following scripture, they all have a regulated lifestyle, they all have a concept of sadhana and sadhaka. You know, so these kind of, you know, that element of self, all these different things, they'll all have that same concept. But the difference comes is not as much necessary. I mean, you would say yes, and your Sambandha Gyan they don't know, so therefore their Prayojana is wrong. But the main point where the difference comes is in the attitude, in Prajumna. What is their desire? What's their attraction? So if you change it from they want a bhukti or mukti, you know, or siddhi, like this, to bhakti, then that same knowledge they have, it all gets adjusted properly. Right? You know, it's just like, let's say somebody puts salt in the preparation. Now, putting salt is not a problem. But if they put too much or too little, that's where the problem lies. So the concept is there. So the different things that they have are correct, but it's just they're out of proportion because of a particular desire and goal they want. Therefore, the demigods are like this. Because otherwise, then it's just, I called them, they have to be here. Rather than, I call, and then if they want, they're here. So the Karma Mumsis, it's very much, I'm control. You know, it's just like the Gyanis, I'm God because I'm Brahman. So the Karma is, I'm the controller and enjoyer because I chanted the mantra. Right? I did the work, therefore I must get the result. Not like I did the work and then it's up to the mercy of the person. No, I chanted the mantra, I did the puja, all the ritual is exactly correct. Therefore, I must get the result. That's why we say, you know, karma is all business. You know, it's like, I went to the shop, I paid my money, I get my goods. But technically, the shop owner doesn't have to give it to you. He can give you your money back. You know, like that. So that's the whole, he's free. In other words, if I go there to the shop owner, insult him and everything, throw the money at him, and then say, now give me the goods, he'll just tell me to leave the shop. Right? So that's the whole thing, is that the personal is there, and so the karmis and gyanis don't actually want to acknowledge that. Right? You know, if God's just sitting there at the gate in a big armchair, right? And that, and then just saying, you know, pointing to the left or the right, you know, like that, because it says you go around God to get into heaven. But once you get into heaven, hey, it's all your scene. It's not, God's not part of the scene. Now, if God's in heaven and he's there doing all what he does, then you have a problem. Because then you have to bring what you do in line with him. Right? But if it's no, he's just the gatekeeper, then hey, you know. Not that there's a problem with God being a gatekeeper, but it's out of devotion, right? It's in Vamadadeva. But so maybe that's it. They're all worshipping Vamadadeva. They just don't know it. But then they have him as an old man instead of a little boy.
He's in the lower heavenly planets.
Yes. And that's where they go there also. There. Yeah, unless they're thinking of baby Jesus. Okay. Yes.
So when the Prajumna, it changes, you know, from
when the Prajumna changes,
when the attitude changes from Purutus to Bhakti, then the knowledge that they have in Sambandha, it becomes from partial to complete. Is that so?
It is, but that means that they have to accept the knowledge in line with the sampradaya. In other words, they can't maintain their old attachments and then just add in, you know, change the deity. You know what I'm saying? Because otherwise, then that's how you get the smartas as Vaishnavas, but they're considered apasampradaya because it's not, they still have a material concept of God. But once they come to having a transcendental concept of God by the association of the Vaishnavas, that's when then they become sampradaya. Like that. So basically it is just a change of consciousness. And then everything else is fine. But you have to make sure that all these other things are worked out. You know, just like, let's say, if someone has a tendency to get colds, then you're always a little more careful about how they dress, where they are, and everything like that. So, if you know that their problem is purva mimamsa, then you're going to be a little more careful when you're dealing in areas that are there to explain more on that. Just like someone who's a Brahma body or like that, and impersonalist, then you're going to spend a little more effort on those sides. Does that make sense? Okay. This doubt is resolved by understanding the difference between gross human bodies and the subtle celestial bodies. Moreover, there are numerous accounts in the Puranas and Itihasas of sages and yogis who, by their mystic power, expand themselves into many forms. Sri Govinda Basya. Samshaya. If it is accepted that devatas have bodies, there will be a contradiction in performing sacrifice. It is not possible for one deva with his limited body to be present at many sacrifices performed simultaneously by humans. Right? So we see here's again that point that material is always limiting, which it does have, but they can't understand is there subtle forms that is less limiting, but still it's not like the spiritual world. Right? So you still have the same thing. That's why we say there's material consciousness. Then there's the flavor of karma, the flavor of jnana. Because they're both fruitive, they're both impersonalists. It's just one, you know, favors the other thing, one favors this side. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yeah, they don't even have evidence from the Shastras in the mention of samshaya.
But they don't actually have evidence from the Shastras for the Brahmavad either. I mean, for the impersonal either.
Does the Brahmavadis have something?
No, they make something. You know what I'm saying? They create something. Because as we saw before, they take these different things. So the gyan, the karmis do the same thing. They take something because it says a point. Then they'll apply it where it's not actually meant to be applied. So that's the whole thing, is that everybody has something, but they all miss the point. Yes?
So here it refers to gross bodies and subtle celestial bodies, meaning their stula sharira is more subtle.
Yes, yes.
They have linga and karana sharira.
Still, yes, yes, yes. It just means... there's, you know, there may be more ekash in their bodies or something to make it, yeah, you know, make it a bit more like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's all. It's just it becomes more.
Okay. Another point is that Jaimini has his own sutras too, so they follow their own set of shastra.
Yeah, yeah. Jaimini has his own set of sutras. Like the six schools, they all have their own. Vedanta, then there's just one thing. But Jaimini has his own sutras, right? Was it? Atato Karma Jigyasa or something? You know, so now it's time to inquire about pious activities. You know, it's like, give us a break. You know, so he has that, you know, there's the Yoga Sutras, you know, then you have Nyaya has its own, everything has its own, but it's all based on Veda. So they'll have their, what do you call it? The Vishaya Vakyas that they'll choose. And then from that, they'll build their whole philosophy. It means Jaimini is the most, Jaimini and the impersonalists will be the most, difficult. Because they are willing to apply their philosophy to any verse. While the other four schools basically avoid anything that doesn't nicely fit into their discussion. So generally it's not a problem, right? Because they, you know, you're doing the yoga and this and that, so it's not so much, you're not worried about, you know, little technical points. You're worried that you're going to be able to sit in your asan for a long time, you know, stuff like that. Does that make sense? So does that make sense? That's their, so they use that as their authority.
Yes.
Yeah. So in other words, Jaimini's thinking, the others aren't so much. They just follow. Siddhanta, Virodha Karmaniti Chen Naneka Pratipater Darshanat. If one argues that there is contradiction in regard to sacrifices, the answer is no, since it is seen that the devatas can expand their forms into many. In accepting that devatas have bodies, there is no contradiction. Why? Because it is seen that persons possessing great powers can expand their forms into many. Aneka Pratipater Darshanat, as in the case of Saubari. Bhagavatam verse reference. Karma Mimamsa philosopher says it is impossible for the devatas to be embodied beings because their presence is invoked at many sacrifices simultaneously. They're not just going by, oh, they have subtler bodies than ours. They're just going, how can they be at so many places at once? Because if you have a body, you're limited. If there's no body, then you can, then there's no limitation. Mm-hmm. Like that.
With Saubari Rishi, I think he's the one who expanded himself to marry so many thousands or hundreds of wives too.
Oh.
So even he's the one who was meditating underwater.
Okay.
And then when he emerged, he wanted to marry the king's daughters, okay. But they looked at him and he was looking a little fishy because he'd been underwater for the last.
Literally.
So, that's the point, is even for someone with such material motivations, can expand himself, so to speak, of the
so demigods
who are serving the Lord.
Yes, yeah. Yes.
So it's not a big thing.
No. Yeah.
50 of them.
Sorry?
Is it 50?
50, yeah, still 50. It's not bad. Seems to be, it's the serious number for those who have accumulated enough piety. You know, because Narad Muni, then it was 50 Apsara girls, and then Saubari, it's 50. So somehow or another, I'm not sure why 50, but somehow or another, that seems to be the number. Not happy about something. The Mimamsakas are wrong because the devatas are empowered to receive sacrifice by the grace of the Supreme Lord dwelling in their hearts, right? So in other words, the fire is carrying it and it's by the grace of the Lord because the fire is Krishna. So therefore, then all these different demigods are able to get their different results of the sacrifice. So it's by God's arrangement. So because they don't worry so much about the Supreme. Basically, the Supreme is only someone who arranges that you get your results. So since they all get their results, because what you could also say is that, well, if we're all chanting, doing the yajna, how can we all get the results? You know, although you can say, well, everything's all the manifestation of mantras, but how do they get the gross results? Right? So they're comfortable that all of these Brahmins are getting their results. So the point is why is that? Because the Lord is arranging it. So if you can do that, the demigods can get their results also. Thus, may the devas manifest many forms simultaneously. Srimad Bhagavatam 7.8.42. King Indra said, O Supreme Lord, you are our deliverer and protector. Our shares of sacrifice, which are actually yours, have been recovered from the demon by you. Because the demoniac King Hiranyakashipu was most fearsome, our hearts, which are your permanent abode, were all overtaken by him. Now, by your presence, the gloom and darkness in our hearts have been dissipated. O Lord, for those who always engage in your service, which is more exalted than liberation, all material opulence is insignificant. They do not even care for liberation, not to speak of the benefits of karma, artha, and dharma. So, is that the Mimamsakas are putting so much emphasis on this dharma, artha, and kama that's what they want. So they're not even aware of these higher principles. But the demigods, here King Indra is pointing out, when in their moments of clarity, then that devotional side comes up, they're able to see the Lord in the proper position. And then they're able to appreciate how dharma, artha, and kama, what the gains from it are not very important. Right? They'll also point out how liberation's not, but we're discussing Mimamsakas, so we only need to bring out this aspect. Right? Yeah. Footnote 30. The demigods have the power to expand themselves because it is their responsibility to accept sacrifice on behalf of the Lord. O Supreme Lord, you who protect us have taken back your share of sacrifice from the demon. Since everything that belonging to us, the servants, actually belongs to you, the Master. Our hearts are your house because there we constantly meditate upon you. So that's Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Then the next verse, Srimad Bhagavatam 10.14.33. Yet, even though the extent of the good fortune of these residents of Vrindavan is inconceivable, we 11 presiding deities of the various senses, headed by Lord Shiva, are also most fortunate, because the senses of these devotees of Vrindavan are the cups through which we repeatedly drink the nectarian, intoxicating beverage of the honey of your lotus feet. Footnote 31. Why should the devatas not possess bodies? They themselves are expansions of the Lord's body and senses. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. There are 10 senses plus mind, intelligence, false ego, and chitta, with corresponding devatas. Of these, genital and anus are rejected as lowly. The devata of the chitta is Vasudeva, Krishna. Excluding these three, 11 senses and their devatas remain. We 11 sense devatas are experiencing Krishna's sweetness through the 11 senses of the inhabitants of Braja. Right, so you see what he's done here is that, because otherwise you get the 10 and 11, we're counting the mind, but he's also counting intelligence, false ego, and the consciousness, means the yes. So then, That's then you end up with 14, right? But they're not counting the, how you say, the genital and the anus and the, and Vasudeva is chitta is Krishna, so the consciousness. So they're just counting intelligence and false ego along with the other 8 senses and the mind, right? So this way they get 11. So in any case, how you look at it, you get 11. You can either say the living entity is functioning on this, so there's 11. But when they're talking about themselves and their being able to appreciate the Lord and through the medium of the Brajavasis, then they're dropping off these other two and counting the intelligence and the ego, so because they have that pure identity. Yes?
Shiva is for the ego.
Yes, yes. Yes.
Like, there are the senses, and then there are demigods, and there is a avatar of Lord beyond that also, because I write it in
yes. Yes. So it depends on how you're putting together. You have the Adidaiva, Adiatmak, Adidaivak, and Adibhautik. Right? So in this case, then the Adiatmak would be ourselves or the senses. The Adidaivak would be Adibhautik would be the demigods, and Adidaivik then would be the Lord who's behind them, if you're adding the Lord into it. If you're not, then you're taking it that Adiatmak will be your senses, Adibhautik will be the environment around you, and the Adidaivik will be the demigods that are controlling that interaction. So that's another formula that we haven't focused on so much. But this Adiatmak, Adidaivik, Adibhautik, it also applies to everything. Like that, because you're always going to have the person is controlling, and then what's in between, what connects the two, like that. Does that make sense?
So, can we, like, while speaking or while making our material, can we focus back onto the Supreme Lord?
Yes, yes. No, that's the whole point, is you're trying to get to the Supreme Lord. These other processes these other religious aspects are only there to bring you to the actual proper religion. Because the point is, it's Krishna who's involved in everything. But let's say that one has a practical mind, either intellectually or for, you know, how you say, you know, facility. Then one's going to say, okay, well, that's nice, that's the philosophy, but what about the practical? So then people will turn to, you know, people who will give some kind of answers to that. But the Veda has all that technical point. We just don't understand how that's what's going on. very sorry. So the Vedas then explain all this so that we can have all that. But the point is that if you accept that it's for pleasing Krishna, then you're not worried about the technical aspects. But it's not that you don't know that they're there or can't explain them, it's just not the important point. You know what I'm saying? It's just like the person goes in the kitchen, they cook, because they're cooking for some friends. And so what are they focusing on? The friends and the mood and this and that, try to make it nice, and you know, this one might like this, that one likes that. And so you do that. But does that mean that they're not using the techniques of cooking? They don't know all the technical points? No, but if you ask them, well, how did you do this? They can explain it. You understand? It's just the focus is different. Does that make sense? You know, so that's the point.
Interesting, only from Parashara Muni, he mentions like many other shastras.
But why does Parashara mention?
Because
he's speaking specifically for application in Kali Yuga. So in Kali Yuga, people try to think in this more mechanistic way, because they think that's solid, right? In other words, the grosser I become in my consciousness, the more I am gross in my understanding of matter. So therefore, the mechanics of it become more. So if I'm more sophisticated, it'll be sophisticated mechanics. If I'm not, then it'll be more, you know, like the animals. It's not that sophisticated. Does that make sense? Yeah, so that's the whole point. But it's not that the mechanics aren't the same. It's just a matter of your consciousness. So depending on the consciousness, it's more sophisticated or less, more technical or not, more emotional or not, then the Vedas deal with all that. Is that like that. It's just a matter of, we generally don't necessarily focus on that. You know, it's just we're not used to it. You know, we're used to science and arts, but not what's the essence of it, what's the real point. Does that make sense? Yeah. Here, something should be considered. The sun, moon, devatas, men, animals, and all other entities of the spiritual world are Satchitananda. The material sun, moon, and the devatas are imitations of the spiritual counterparts. The devatas of the material realm are especially empowered agents of the devatas of the spiritual world. The material senses cannot act alone. Only by the devatas' power can the senses experience material objects. But the spiritual senses of the associates of the Lord experience the Lord's form and sound by their own spiritual senses, not those of the material devatas. But Brahma, in his enthusiasm, identified his powers over material intellect with the senses of, in the inhabitants of Braja. Furthermore, the material sense... Right, so in other words, identifying with the devotees, then that's a good thing. You know, so just in his enthusiasm, but technically, then it's not, there's no connection. But what it is through seeing the Brajabasis absorbing their senses in Krishna, he is a lord of senses, then, or of the intelligence, then he's feeling, you know, engaging his intelligence in the Lord's service. So he becomes, so he's just seeing that connection in that way, that identity that way. You know what I'm saying? There's technically not, but because of the emotional, then it's there. But the effect is there because it's dealing with the Lord, dealing with the devotees, so it gives the effect.
So does this mean that in the material realm, our senses are not acting independently because they only function by the power of the demigods presiding that specific sense? And yes. So in one sense, they experience everything we experience because everything goes through them.
That's why there's pious and impious.
Uh-huh.
Because they control it. They don't want to do weird things. They don't want to be, you know... They don't want to be eating some of the weird stuff that people eat.
Yeah.
You know, so because of that, therefore then there's... So it's not that they specifically eat it, but they're the ones that are the controllers of that, the process is going on. But that potency still comes from Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
like that.
Right.
So that's the whole point. So the demigods can fit into the spiritual process, but it has to be in Krishna consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
So if they become Krishna conscious, then they get that spiritual benefit.
Mm-hmm.
So then it works nicely. So these things are very subtle, because you have the original spiritual demigods, then you have those who are the associates of, you know, Mahavishnu, then that expanded as the associates of Garbhodakshaya Vishnu, and then the associates of Kiradakshaya. So when we talk about the demigods, it's actually the associates of Kiradakshaya Vishnu.
Mm-hmm.
So they're a bit down the line, of,
yeah.
actually.
Yeah.
But still, that potency comes from the Lord, because it's the universal form. He does. So his arms are these different demigods.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how everything functions. But they are able to render that activity, that service.
Mm-hmm.
So if they see it as a service, then they get that devotional benefit. They don't, then they get the, you know, the benefit of taking part in that way and that experience of being in that control.
Mm-hmm.
Is that?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's the whole thing, is that we can see it's all consciousness. It's like before we were talking about the Mimamsakas. Now if they change their consciousness, then they don't technically change their lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So in the same way is that these demigods, that they change the consciousness, they also don't have to change their position, what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
So in other words, if you're following the Vedas, there's no need of change.
Yeah.
If you're not following the Vedas, you don't necessarily change in the beginning, but at some point you have to change, because what you're doing may not actually have very much use.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it means that it's such an inferior offering, so therefore mm-hmm. why would you do that? Once you become purified and come to the standard of understanding what's higher.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? You know, it's like the small child, then they're going out and picking some dandelions out in the backyard for their mom on Mother's Day.
Mm-hmm.
But now when they grow up and they're adult, they're not going out and picking dandelions. They're bringing some nice flowers,
mm-hmm.
you know. So the point is it's a matter of you develop as it goes.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Is that?
Yeah. Another point question. In contrast, the associates of the Lord, due to the fact that they have such Chidananda bodies, and they're interacting with the Lord, there's no material devata who's intervening or acting as a via medium for their enjoyment.
No, because the point is they're acting directly with Krishna.
Yeah.
And so Krishna is that potency of the demigod, so there's no need of a demigod in between.
Yeah.
But since the materialist is dealing with Krishna, but not directly, therefore they deal with the demigods.
Right.
So they don't. But it's not that there's not demigods there, that they have all these different things and they take part in the pastimes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just like when Krishna comes back in the afternoon, you know, from tending the cows, then there's a gap between when he's left the fields and when he arrives in Braj. So the demigods come and take advantage to come and offer their prayers and respects and everything
mm-hmm.
like that.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, they'll have their part in the pastime and doing different things, you know, make the clouds nice or this or that or,
mm-hmm.
you know, but it's just in service to the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
So, but you don't require them to actually experience anything.
Mm-hmm.
Well, here, you actually do.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
So that's why there's recommendation on what to do, what not to do, not just like, oh, we don't care for the rules.
Yeah.
It's that, no, it's that you don't care for the rules, but the demigods do,
mm-hmm.
you know, because they have to deal with it.
Yeah.
You know? So that's the problem.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So because, you know, we have two sets of demigods in the spiritual world and the material world. Therefore, when Krishna performs his pastimes, we have the devtas in the spiritual world coming and joining, not the devtas in the material world.
They also come and join. But the point is it's just a matter of, you're saying there's two sets. Technically, there's only one. It's just different aspects. Because the potency means, it's like this. Okay, if we're saying that the demigod in the material world is completely separate, then why 14 times in a day of Brahma does the jiva that's sitting in the post of Indra change? But the post doesn't change. That means actually that the position of Indra is beyond the jiva.
Mm-hmm.
The jiva is actually able to take part. But actually the position, that potency of what is Indra, that's coming from, you know, the higher up, you know, those higher up in the, they say? Prashad chain. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. Because after they do the puja for the Lord and that, and they're going to start the next puja, then they take all the garlands and all that from that, and that's all given to Vishwakshena. So there is an order, right? You know, so then it comes down from there. Right? So that's the whole point, is that the more we see the difference, then the more technical it becomes and hard to understand, the less we see the difference. But there is a difference. In other words, there's no difference, but we can discern the difference. That's then when it becomes easier. Does that make sense? Walking signs. We had elephants, now there's a sign going by. Yes.
So Parisharamuni explains that with demigods, the Paramatma Amsha is in greater quantity, and the Jiva just takes part.
Okay.
That way.
So that means the demigod means the Paramatma aspect is actually greater, and then the Jiva just takes part in it. Because the potencies aren't coming from the Jiva. It's just he takes part. So just as we're not the doer, they're not the doer either. You know, just they're not the doer in taking care of your not the doerness. Right? Like that. Okay. Furthermore, the material senses experience the enjoyment of the objects of the material world, and the sense devatas, being enablers of the senses, do not enjoy. However, without Brahma and others being situated in the intelligence, eye, etc., the senses of even those fixed in Krishna consciousness could not experience form or smell. This is the opinion of those with knowledge of the soul. Right? So, within the material world, still it's the devata that's arranging that potency is so you can hear and smell and do all the different things in service to Krishna. But it's not that they are the ones that are enjoying it. They're just the ones, dealing with it. Right? So but the point is we know that the devata, it's coming from Krishna. So we can just see Krishna in it. But the point is we respect the demigods because they're taking that role to assist the Lord in his activities. Right?
Yes. In the second canto, Srila Prabhupada also mentions that the demigods, they're very happy when the jivas are taking part in taking up Krishna consciousness, and they actually try to do something favorable for their spiritual practice so they could go back to Krishna.
Oh, yes. Good. Yes. Good. Okay. Okay, Sutra 1.3.28. Shabda iti chen natav prabhavat pratyakshanu manabhyam shabdaha. The words of the Vedas, iti, thus, chet, if, na, no, ata, this, from this, prabhavat, because of creation, pratyaksha, because of shruti, anu manabhyam, and smriti. One argues that the words of the Vedas denoting demigod, devatas, are not eternal. The answer is no, since beings are created from eternal words. This is shown in Shruti and Smriti statements.
Why is Shruti not Shabda but Pratyaksha?
Why is Shruti
not Shabda and Pratyaksha?
Why is it not? No, he's saying, they're saying is that it's not eternal, there, but here it's saying, no, it is eternal. And so, beings are created from eternal words. And that's shown through the Shruti and Smriti statements. So, what is it that you're...
Because we have Pratyaksha Anuman and Shabda Praman. So Shruti has to be Shabda Praman, not Pratyaksha, because Anuman is Smriti.
No, but what does that have to do with this? I don't catch the connection. Because we're talking about, this is shown in Shruti and Smriti statements, so that's Shabda. No? So what's the point of Pratyaksha and Anuman? I didn't catch where it connects. You're okay. Sutra Pakashika. Here, the Karma Mimamsaka attempts to prove that the notion that the devatas possess bodies is refuted by linguistic argumentation. They cite a Purva Mimamsa text which states that, in the Vedas, the relation between name and object, and the object named is eternal. Thus, in their view, the idea that the devatas are embodied souls would contradict the eternality of the names in the Vedas. Vyasa defeats this proposition by appealing to the description of the creation of the world, that all beings are created by Lord Brahma, by remembering their eternal archetypal forms recorded in the statements of the Vedas. Vyas also cites more evidence from Shruti and Smriti. Shri Govinda Bhashya.
This is the primary creation, archetypal, that is
named. Yes, means that he's remembering their eternal, the archetypal is the primary creation, because that is eternal. That's why we say that the material, it means that the material world is eternal, because all these different things, the principles of it are all eternal. Just its manifestation, where we can see it, that's temporary. But the principle that a dog is a dog, it's always a dog. So all the universes, the dogs do the same thing. And in every creation, they're always the same. Why? Because the archetypal is always the same.
Is it?
Yes. It depends upon which ones they're talking about. I don't even think they get that far, the primordial demigods. I don't think that they worry so much about that. They're more worried about within the material, within the universe, because that's where they're going to. You are going to enjoy, the benefits of your karma here. You're not going to enjoy it in Mahakalapura. Right, so that's not going to be their thing. The impersonalists, they'll be interested in that. But these ones, no. Yeah. Yes?
I think I understood the question Mataji was asking about Pratyaksha Hanuman. Is that from the word-for-word translation, it says Pratyaksha Hanuman Abhyam. That's translated as Shruti and Smriti. So I think that means that within Shabda, there are further subcategories of Pratyaksha Hanuman. So it's not taking pratyaksha as pratyaksha within the madhva or the epistemological sense, those three categories. It's within shabda. Then there's further subdivisions of what's directly received, and then what's later expanded on by the sages, which is smriti.
Oh, okay.
Which is the application of the direct teachings through shruti.
Okay.
So these are not the three primary categories. It is the two categories in the shabda.
Within the three, there's pratyaksha, anuman, and shabda. Shabda, and then within shabda, then these terms are used to denote the difference between shruti.
Because the point is, as it says here, is that by the archetypal, is that what experience you can gain and what is the process for understanding that, that's defined by shruti. Right?
Mm.
Does that make sense? And so then, as the Prabhu is saying, then the great sages, understanding this, then they explain that in Smriti. Does that make sense? Okay. But what you should have said before is that, no, but in the verse, the word here is using Pratyaksha Hanuman. Yeah, no, because otherwise then I was only going by this shown in Shruti and Smriti, so I was taking this one. Yes, but then you have to say that, otherwise then it's not known. That's why I was asking, what are you connecting it to? Sri Govinda Bhashya. Shamshaya, using that reasoning, if you say that devatas have bodies, there will be no problem in doing sacrifice for devatas, but then their names should not be mentioned in the Vedas. Since they are born and later meet with destruction, their names in the Veda will have no meaning after they disappear, just as the phrase son of a barren woman has no meaning. Unless you're Alabanduru, and then you can say that. Right? Moreover, a Purva Mimamsa text says, "Au patikas tu shabdera artasya sambandha. The relationship of an object denoted with a specific word is eternal. There is thus a contradiction, right? So he's saying they're temporary. You know, it's fine. If you're going to say they have bodies, then they're here. Okay, then we do the sacrifice there. Nice. But the problem is then they, why would their name be in the Veda if they're temporary? Because the Veda is eternal. And it says, and then the Purvamimamsa text says that the relationship between the object denoted and the specific word is eternal. Like you say table, then, you know, it's not, it doesn't have a very good, how you say, going back in the meaning. But what does the table do? Right? It keeps things off the floor. Right? So the Sanskrit words and their roots mean just that, but somehow or another, giving it some time, you know, since the, I say, Parasaram's tour and coming out in Central Asia and then coming over and that and then chasing wild boars around for a while, then it comes out as a table. You know, and so what's the connection? Not sure, but whatever it is. But that relationship between what that object does and the principle of it, that's eternal. Right, so that's what's mentioned here. So then they're saying is that thus there's a contradiction because they're here, but then they're not eternal. But then it says that there's a relationship, they're eternal. So the only way they can be eternal is that they're just mantras. Right? They can't see that the Lord is there and they're empowered. In other words, these two things at once, this is always the problem. So that's why Achinta Beta Beta Tattva becomes the easiest way of solving any kind of misunderstanding. Mm-hmm. Like that. Because it is able to deal with two things that seem contradictory at one time and not having a problem because it's the Lord. Right? If it's not the Lord, then yes, you're going to have a problem. Mm-hmm. Right? You can't be in Tallahassee and New York at the same time. And even if you go to the New York pizza place in Tallahassee, it's still not the same. Right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That makes sense?
Well, that means that besides Sanskrit, all the other languages in the world which are derived from Sanskrit, they're never the same in each creation. There's always going to be, I mean, even from year to year, the language changes.
Yes, but it'll be the modes, so they'll be the same thing. So there'll always be a language, a Malecha language, you know, like English. Mm-hmm. But the point is whether it's necessarily called English or it's called, you know, something else.
English.
Huh? Yeah, Binglish, or maybe, you know, that's Greenland, so it's Greenland. You know. Great Greenland, you know. Or the Greenish Isles, you know, like that. You know, so whatever it is, it doesn't matter. There always is going to be the same thing, you know. Does that make sense? There's always going to be those same experiences, whether they have exactly the same names or not. There'll always be a Colonel Sanders. Now, whether he's a colonel, maybe the next time he'll be a general, next time he'll just be private, you know, like that. You know, so it doesn't matter, but there'll always be that experience.
Yeah.
As the modes come up, then that becomes important.
Yeah.
You know, in other words, the eternal connection between riding on a Harley and holding on to a bucket of, you know, how you say, the Colonel Sanders, the nuggets, you know, that two go together, you know. So, like that, it's just what you call it, you know. Yeah. Does that make sense? You know, maybe the, you know, next generation, the gun is called Harley and the motorcycle is called Hammersmith. You know, but it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
That experience will be there.
Mm-hmm.
So that language, that grammar, that changeability, all that is just something that goes through by the modes. We're thinking, no, it's new, it's unique, this is us. It's just the modes of nature. Every Kali Yuga does exactly the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
So we're thinking, oh, we're so different. No, every Kali Yuga, they do this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like that. So it's not a special. Okay. There is thus a contradiction, for if Devata's names exist without the Devata being present, the relationship is not eternal. Right? So the point is what's eternal is the position of the demigod, who is the Lord, Paramatma, is there. The jiva is changing. You know, it's like saying the car doesn't exist because the driver got out of it. You know, the car still exists. Different driver comes and sits down. Does that make sense? You know, you have a taxi. Different people drive it. They have shifts. It's not that the car is non-existent because... Okay. Siddhanta. Shabda iti chen natha prabhavat pratyakshanu manabhyam. If one argues that the words of the Vedas denoting devatas are not eternal, the answer is no, since beings are created from eternal words. This is shown in Shruti and Smriti statements. There is no contradiction in Vedic words, shabda, though the devatas are not eternal. Why? Because beings are created from the eternal words, atta prabhavat. The words denoting objects in the Vedas denote the eternity of those particular forms. The material forms arise by remembrance of those eternal forms expressed by the particular words. Right? So Brahma is the one who creates things. So by remembering the eternal words, that's how he creates. The forms are eternal because they exist previous to their manifestation. In Vishvakarma's books, these forms are described. For instance, Yama has a staff in his hand, or Varuna has a noose in his hand. Others then paint the picture. Right? Does that make sense? So the... What did he mention here? Vishvakarma, yeah. So, in other words, in the Vastu Shastra, when it's talking about the deities, he mentions what the deity looks like, the exact form. Then someone will paint that picture, and then you have that demigod present in that form. But the position of what he looks like is always the same. Right? So then, here in it, Yama always has a staff. So every 14 times in the day of Brahma, every day of Brahma, Yama has a staff. Go to every universe, he has a staff. Right? Because the primordial demigod has a staff. Does that make sense? Okay. He has a staff, and by behaving badly, you can get staff. But he doesn't have staff. He has a staff.
The object of staff itself represents like punishment.
Yeah, punishment and the authority for that. So that's what he has. Just like Varuna has a noose. Like that. Words in the Vedas describing Indra are indications of a particular form, like the word cow. They do not describe a specific individual, like the word chaitra. Since the words of the Vedas express eternal forms, they are not without authority. Nor are they contradictory to the Mimamsa statements. Why is that? Because of Shruti and Smriti statements, pratyakshanu manabhyam. Shruti describes the creation with words. Brahma created the devatas by uttering ate. He created men by uttering asrigram. He created the pitris by uttering indavaha. He created planets by uttering tiras pavitram. He created verses of praise by uttering ashuva. He created mantras by the word vishva. He created all other beings by uttering abhisaubhaga. Paschi Vimshati Brahmana 6, 9, 13, 22, and 6, 12, 1, 3. Right? So very detailed down to four sections. Right? Yes.
My question is about these original archetypal forms. Within the mainstream science, it said that all species, there's like a genetic code, and that's actually the most essential like recipe or blueprint for that being. But in Gita, we see Krishna says, I am the seed-giving father. He says, Aham Bija Prada. So that Bija really is equivalent with these kind of sound vibrations, these original...
Yes, you say. Because the DNA, these are just mechanics. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just like, okay, stir the sabji with the spoon. Mm-hmm. But now the exact how the spoon, its molecular structure, how it's integrating with the pot and with the vegetable itself and all that, you could get into a whole thing, probably write a whole thesis on that and be the world authority, like that. And so, But the point is there's something behind it. Why is that pot being stirred? Why are we stirring the subject? Why is it in a pot? Why is it going to... Who created that? That they don't know. They're saying the DNA is here. But why is there DNA? Why is those things there? You know, so that's the thing, is they don't catch that aspect. They'll just see mechanically why things are there, like we were discussing a little bit yesterday. Is that, okay, someone's driving in a car. And while they're driving in a car, then there's some emergency phone call. The person sitting next to them in the seat is, you know, saying something to them. And the kids in the back are yelling, screaming, and fighting, and throwing things around in the car. Then, from that, then, you know, then there was an accident. Mm-hmm. Like that. Now the people have come out, then they, not knowing that scene, they'll look at the car, the tire, the ground. Okay, we notice that at cross, you know, when it's a full cross, then there's these kind of things. If it's a T cross, it's another thing. And then if it's a T cross, you know, perpendicular, is that, you know, which one they're on, you know, like that. And then this one had a manhole cover here. That one had a, you know, the drain grate here. This one had one on both sides of the road. So they'll be looking at all these different things, the trees there, the shade, the and so they'll look at all that and then try to come up with theories. Mm-hmm. And then doing that for 1,000 years, and you come up with a little bit more of some kind of a theory. But in the actuality, it's just the person in the car is, you know, too distracted. So that they won't catch, because they don't see that personal aspect and those things behind. So they'll only try to identify these mechanical things and say, oh, it's because of this, it's because of the DNA. But where does the potency, if we're working on Newton's third law, that every action has an equal reaction, that there has to be a potency there, then where does the potency for the DNA to zip and unzip come from? That they're not explaining, that they can't explain. You know, they can only say it's there. You know, and why is it now we have a dog, and then you can say that all the dogs, they have the connect. But where did dog come from? You know, they'll take it back, but then that means then in the protozoic, its DNA includes all the things from all the other DNAs. So that means then, why are they bothering stem cells? Then let's get into protozoa, because take the protozoa, and their DNA can make anything. You know, but they're not doing that. Because they can't make these connections. And then still the point comes, where does the protozoa's potency come from? And they say, oh, well, it's the primordial soup and the lightning. Where did the lightning come from? Why is there lightning? You know? And why does that come? So that's the thing, is they can't deal with that personal aspect. So that's the whole point, is it all goes back to the Lord, and it's all done by Shabda, by sound. Does that make sense? So that sound moves in ether, therefore then akasha. You know,
is that within the material realm, is sound the primeval kind of component? Because in the order of creation, first you get ether, which is the space for that sound.
Because if there's no space, you can't have anything else. Uh-huh. So without space, then how will sound happen? Right? So ether is there, then you get sound.
Right.
You know, or you can say the desire for sound is there in the Lord.
Yeah.
Therefore, then the ether is created, the ears are created, and the whole process is created.
Right.
But the point is so it's by the desire of the Lord, that's where it comes from. Because He desires, therefore it happens. He is potent.
Yeah.
So that's what's missing in the scientific understanding. Is that you have to have space. So it means you say you're going to have a big bang, but the point is where does that big bang expand into? How is it that the ether expanded first? What if Earth had expanded first? Then that it wouldn't have gone anywhere. You know, it would have just kind of, you know, blown up, and everybody would have been pressed against the wall, you know, like that kind of a, you know, cartoonish kind of thing. But how does it there? So that means space was already there. So then it means that the creation may be expanding and contracting, but the space always remains. So who's maintaining space? That's why they can't understand time and space, because they're beyond earth, water, fire, air, and ether. Or earth, water, fire, air, ether, they don't really understand. That's the point. They don't understand ether, and so they only understand four elements. Like that. So it's kind of limited, their scientific. Is that
And in the spiritual world, there'd be no distinction between space and sound due to the absolute nature.
Yes, but at the same time, you can tell the difference.
Yeah.
You can tell that it's an open place and that there is a sound. And but, yeah, it means that, it, in other words, yeah, there is a non-difference that here the mechanics come up because of the temporariness and people want a process. Because if you're not including God in the equation, then you have to satisfy the intelligence, then there must be mechanics. In the spiritual world, there's all those mechanics are there, but that's not what's important.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
You know what I'm saying. So it's just like, let's say somebody gives a gift, you know, they say something edible. So what's more important, how it was cooked or who gave it? Yeah, so that's the thing. So in the spiritual world, because that's there, it's not that the other can't be explained. Yoga Maya is doing all these, but it doesn't require that mechanics. It's simply because Krishna's desire is there. It's not that the potencies don't have all these things. It's just in the spiritual world, who worries about it?
Yeah, right.
Right. You know, it's like if you have money and how much money you need, it's always there and whenever you want it, however you want it, do you actually worry about how the money's there and how it's working? So when you don't have money, that's when you worry about it.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. So that's the thing. They have that relationship with Krishna. It's perfect. So you don't have to worry about the mechanics. That's why Krishna is Mukdatta, because Sarvagya, that's all the mechanics. So the Kriya and Icha Shakti, Kriya and Jnana Shakti serve the Icha Shakti because that's the actual taste. That's what rasa is. The other ones, it's not really the taste. So that's why Balaram, in all his features, is always servant of the Lord. So from Balaram to Sesha, then all those different aspects, they all serve Krishna's desire. Like that. So that's the important aspect. So it's not that it can't be mechanically explained. So most of the time when we explain mechanics, we just explain it from here. Because if there is a need for it, generally it's only here. And then we explain it from here. But it's not that there also doesn't have the same. This is a reflection of that. So it must be the similar. But there is the higher aspect. So it's not so important. Because here we're thinking the mechanics makes it happen. No, it's because of Krishna's desire it happens. And just we're seeing the mechanics. That's why a mechanistic view of things actually is very limited in what it's doing. So we'll say, oh, mechanistic means, but it is mechanical. You want just some sentimental thing. No, it is mechanical, but what are the mechanics for? Unless you show the Lord and how it's in connection with Him, then it's just mechanistic. Does that make sense? You know, like when we approach the cosmos and how it works and all that, generally it tends to be mechanistic. But the point is no, it's just how Krishna likes it. And it's the experience of the karma. And but what's that based on? On the performance of pious activity. What's that based on? The shastra. What's that based on? What Krishna likes. But that's just the forms of what Krishna likes. What's the main point is the bhakti. So if that's there, then everything else makes sense. Does that make sense? So it's not, these mechanistic aren't the big thing. They're actually the small thing. Just like if liberation is not a big thing, then why would karma be a big thing? And why would vikarma be a big thing? You know, it's just, it gets less and less as it goes. So
I was asking because that's one of the central dilemmas in Western philosophy, is the question of universals, of having objects which might share the same name. There's a specific manifestation of it, but there's also a concept, or there's also a universal essence. So Plato proposed that there's actually a transcendental realm of ideas, of forms, but it's still in a very abstract sense. And it's these forms down here are actually taking, borrowing from that. But our understanding is that actually within that transcendental realm, it's not abstract. There's actually not the idea of a table. There actually is a table. There's a primeval. So it's not just like a sound vibration that's there. It's not like a recipe in this terms of a,
yes,
of a sound.
Yes, it's beyond.
There's actually a concrete spiritual manifestation,
yes,
of every single form.
Yeah, for that you have to go back more to Socrates.
Yeah.
Because he had the absolute, but that's the part that gets you killed.
Well, no,
so.
Yeah. It was Aristotle who overturned that idea.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is, yeah, Plato is a little careful about it.
Yeah.
You know, to bring out the absolute, he just refers.
Yeah.
But that way, then those who are against that can, you know, yeah, still adjust. But Aristotle then will revert that to, it's just about what's here, and
yeah,
he doesn't. Yeah.
Okay.
Yes, like that. But still, there's the principle of what is a tree,
yeah,
in the spiritual world. So Yoga Maya is there, and therefore all the trees that they're manifest is there, because that comes from a particular. Particular rasa, and then how to express that rasa.
Uh-huh.
So expressing Shanta Ras through that particular service, then these are the different aspects that can be done. And so there is that concept is there. But that is down in the Jnana and Kriya.
Right.
But why are those there? To express Krishna's desire.
Mm-hmm.
But they're non-different, because he's there, he has the desire, means he can't fulfill the desire. It's not because he has it, then someone else has to create it.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, God created, who created God? No, he creates,
yeah,
it's not necessary.
Because that would be their critique of this philosophy, is that there's an infinite regress, in the sense that, okay, so you have concrete physical manifestations in the spiritual realm, but there must be a realm beyond that which gives the blueprint for that realm.
No, but that...
because there's universals and specifics.
Yeah, but it's within that, because the point is we're taking it as going on and on and on, because we're only looking at the side of Shakti.
Yeah.
But if you look at Shaktiman, there's the source of, so that means they don't have a source.
Uh-huh.
So they don't actually, they don't bring Shaktiman into it. They're actually all Shaktas.
Right.
That's why all these scientists and philosophers are technically... Anamoy, because it's just about the senses, what we can perceive,
mm-hmm,
you know, and then intellectually play with.
Yeah.
But they only play with what can be perceived.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the problem. So they don't understand Shaktiman.
Mm-hmm.
So at that point, then it doesn't keep going in circles. It
right.
goes back to that point and stops, because
yeah.
that is the origin.
Right.
So,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
Okay.
But they'll use that too, because they don't want to stop speculating. Because if there is that, then that means then I have to bring all my intellect in line, processes in line with that, which is exactly what they don't want to do.
Yeah.
Hence, Aristotle.
Yeah.
Like, you know, because this other, that there's an absolute, you have to adjust with that absolute, that's just is
mm-hmm.
not popular.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Jai Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandi.